You mentioned that you have kept your daughter's teeth.
Why would I be talking about that?
Captain's Pod, Stardate 2011-85.1. Welcome aboard the Starship's Enterprise, and thank you for joining us on our continuing voyages through the final frontier. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she's famous for her diction, it's Ambassador Danae.
I do have very impressive diction.
Sometimes, yeah.
What do you mean sometimes?
What's your favorite word to pronounce?
Okay, overpronounce.
Overpronounce?
Is a great word to pronounce.
Anti-disestablishmentarianism. Thank you for asking. How are you this week, Ambassador?
I'm good. I'm a little bit nervous about the show today because you know how last week I said that I had been spoiled?
I've been meaning to bring that back up. What did you get spoiled on last week?
Didn't come up. So it might be this week. So now I can't do anything.
Wait, what? The thing that you got spoiled on wasn't last week's episode?
No, at all. Like nothing.
What?
I can't say it. I know. And it's just really frustrating.
That's really wild.
Yeah, I just... So I'm nervous because if it's not on today, every fucking episode.
This is a nightmare.
It's a nightmare. And I'm
You're
in
being
this,
edged.
I feel like if I say it out loud, I'm perpetuating the issue. Because what if it was just a trolling thing? What if somebody shared something that wasn't at all and I'm never going to see it and I can't participate at all?
I thought you saw like promo material. Did you read a spoiler or did you see a spoiler?
I saw a spoiler.
So then that's going to be real then. That's something
But maybe not. We live in a world of AI. Maybe somebody shared something and they made a thumbnail that was just a pretend thing.
Actually, people are already doing that. They're like comping together RDJ is Doctor Doom in trailers and shit.
Yeah. I could be in that nightmare right now and I can't do the
Maybe
show.
Maybe this isn't real. Well, I hesitate, but this week's episode we're going to be covering Through the Lens of Time, Strange New World, Season 3, Episode 5. Any predictions ignoring the thing that you possibly or may not have been spoiled on?
I can't. There's going to be a telescope. Is that what you want from me?
If that's your honest prediction, then yes, that is exactly what I want.
Yeah, I don't know. It sucks. I feel like I'm paralyzed.
That sucks. I hope it is this week.
I do too. Because if it's not, I'm really going to have to talk to somebody about it. I'll have to go to ChatGPT where that's safe. I can just go to ChatGPT and I can say, is this something that was actually a spoiler? And maybe they'll be able to answer it.
Yeah.
Because if they can, you know, I could do that right now.
Yeah. If only you had a podcast where you could talk about this.
Do you want me to ask you?
No.
Because you don't want to be spoiled on it.
I'll be spoiled. Yeah.
That's my problem. Yeah. I feel like I have some sort of disease, like a communicable disease. Anyway, I'm excited about the show as always, but I'm nervous because I don't know how to participate in the predictions part until this mystery of this thing that I saw is resolved, which it might not be for the entire fucking season.
It may be like a season 4 spoiler.
Oh my God, what if it was a season 4 spoiler?
Oh no, I think I know what the spoiler is.
What do we do?
Does it begin with P?
Yes, it begins with fucking P.
Yeah, it begins with P. I know what the spoiler is.
That's a spoiler?
Season 4.
God fucking damn it!
I should have guessed this! I should have guessed. I know exactly what the spoiler is that you've been spoiled on.
Okay, well, we're back from a little conversation and we've realized that I'm not spoiled for this episode. So now through the lens of time, I can confidently talk about contact lenses.
Oh, that makes more sense. Telescopes and contact lenses, yeah. Like the two extremes of the bending lens scale.
Yeah, it's going to be about, you know, about that.
My hope is bending time. So I'm genuinely hoping that there is going to be like a interstellar style time bending thing where bits of the ship are at different points, like
not
time
again.
Is moving at different times, kind of like the episode of Prodigy. So where they have different pieces of the puzzle and they have to solve it in different ways and they're ahead. Some have long time, some of them don't have much time at all. I want a really good time bending episode, Danae. That's what I would really enjoy. Is that okay? Is that too much to ask?
I think it might be too much to ask. Although this is a long episode, so maybe it is.
Yeah, 55 minutes. Maybe they're bending our time. Okay, with that, let's head over to the holodeck to watch the episode, and we'll see you in 10 forward for a full debrief. And who knows, maybe Commodore Dicer will be waiting there for us. Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. But most important thing first, his lines and skirts are getting shorter with every episode. It's Commodore Dicer!
Captain, we're going to need a bigger landing party.
How are you doing, Atman Commodore?
I'm good. Listen, here's the thing.
Oh, no.
I have had to try so many different ways, so many different excuses not to be on the show. I've lied every single week. Yeah. And I realized I was going to have to be on this week. And I told my wife, I said, we got to get out of town. Like, there's just the show is happening. So I'm out of town. And still, Ian is forcing me to be on this show. So, you know, Ian, he's that kind of captain. He's like, look, it's been half a season. Half a season, dude.
It literally has. And you forgot to sign the consent form on the transporter waiver. So I could have at any point just beamed you onto the ship. But I was trying to respect your wishes to not die and then be brought back as a clone of yourself with new matter, but you've pushed me too far.
I'm glad you're here.
I was going to say, do you have anything to say to your Commodore?
No, visually because this is a podcast, so I'm going to have to describe this to you, but like anytime I get to do a show with Aaron, it just, what you would imagine is you've got Aaron standing there in his Star Trek uniform on the ship. And then there's just me like, bing, bing, just jumping around like, because I love doing the show with Aaron. So.
And also you're just like, your middle finger just hasn't come down. It is just permanently up the entire time.
Why?
Because you're flipping him off.
I'm flipping you off.
Oh, that's so hard to tell when it's on a mon. I've just assumed it was somebody on your end this whole time.
No, it's misinterpreted. That's amazing. That can happen.
Before we get into this week, Commodore, I do want to ask what I almost hesitate to ask. How have you felt about season 3 so far?
Look, the show changed and it left me behind a little bit. And that's
all. Uh-oh.
And that's all we're going to hear from the Commodore this week.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it looks like there was an emergency beam out mid-sentence. I feel like his transporter clone may have stepped in. I'm going to try and reconstruct.
He's stuck in the pattern hover.
That was unkind, Ian, to pretend like my internet went out right when I was starting to say how I haven't liked the show. That's just not okay.
That's
bad form.
My elbow just leant on my captain's chair and just beamed you into... I don't know how you broke out of the transporter beam. That was weird.
Unfortunately, that was probably real. So I may not be long for this world, but I will say... it's okay that they're doing the typical, every episode is about Spock and Chapel now. Every episode is about the thing that's, you know, the Gorn that's still in, you know, what's her name? So it takes a little bit for me away from the fun stuff we're getting when that stuff all has to be forced in there because we're doing typical TV. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like strange. And the other thing is like strange new ? Worlds because we're just doing existing cliches. That's all we're doing this season. We're doing the zombie movie. We're doing the murder mystery. And this week we're doing Indiana Jones. And like, it's just like, how at some point do something I like really creative, go to a strange new world that does something, you know, that we haven't seen. But I will say, I like this cast. I really like hanging out with him, so it doesn't hurt so bad.
Yeah, I think I have exactly the same complaints, but I'm just landing much higher up because my Star Trek filter is like, yeah, that's what Star Trek does. Like, it takes a theme and puts it in space, but I definitely get the issues.
Well, a theme is different than a troped, format. Like, you know what I mean? Like a theme. You can take themes and do something new with the same themes, but it's literally like we're going, oh, what if Star Trek was an alien movie? What if it was an Agatha Christie novel?
I have much higher tolerance for that, even if it is copy and paste into the Star Trek lenses that you then put on. Because I feel like the zombie episode did do something a little new with the zombie.
Sure.
Thing.
That's my least favorite. That zombie episode was my least favorite episode.
The one that I like the most.
My most favorite was the murder mystery. I thought the murder mystery going back and making it like the OG Star Trek, that was really fun, you know.
That metaness was right up your alley. Yeah, I figured you'd have a good time with that one.
And I promise it doesn't have but the slightest bit to do with Chapel's outfits in the old show.
I didn't think so.
So we're about to jump into this week's episode without jumping into it. It was nice that we kind of go back to a Strange New World episode, to your point about like the season so far not really feeling like it was something that was a strange new one. But this one kind of maybe broke that mold a little bit for this season, I think.
Yeah, it was Lana Croft, McCroon Raider was this week. Maybe it was Uhuriana Jones, Kingdom of the Devil's Doll.
Wow, he's been working on these. I mean, at this rate, Spock's the only Womb Raider around here.
All I'm saying is I enjoyed Federational Treasure, Nook of Secrets. I had a good time.
Full disclosure, how many more of these have you got?
Just two more. I really enjoyed The Legend of Vesta, O Corbina of Time.
I like it.
Nice.
And really, let's just change the name of the show to Uncharted New Worlds.
Incredible. I don't know how we're not doing a Sins video for this. I mean, we don't need to now. All of the jokes are now out there in the world.
That's it.
With that, Ambassador, give us a synopsis of this feature-length movie that we just watched.
Oh, my God. In this episode of Strange New Worlds, we actually get to the Strange New Worlds-ing of the show.
Kenfori was a Strange New World as well, technically, but I get it.
Let's see. We need to see more of the pairings of relationships, and so they have decided to put all the three couplings together in an off-world adventure where, oh no, we can't hear anybody. Oh no, we can't transport anybody. And to discover an ancient civilization that has some real weird shit going on. And instead of, you know, thinking about anything going wrong, they let the archaeologist boners get ahead of them and just start touching shit.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody rolls a nat one. This is TPK episode. Except for that they didn't do that. They just TPK'd one, which isn't really a TPK at all. And really, was he dead? Is he dead? That's what they want you to think about at the end of this one. Oh, there's actually more relationships because we get to see the girlfriend, the Gorn friend, go toe-to-toe because...
Oh yeah, she's here.
Why does one ship need to have one parasitic body when it can have two in space? That's it.
Amazing. Commodore, before we do a deep dive on the events of this episode, overall thoughts and feelings, did you like it? Did you okay? I keep looking at your face. I'm like, did you like it, love it, hate it, or was it just okay?
This was a good watch. I dig the Indiana Jones aesthetic. I love the archaeology, you know, idea, and the being trapped in an interdimensional prison, while not a new idea, is really interesting to see in this context. And the idea of being in the same room in separate dimensions and having to figure that out is a really fun, interesting puzzle. So I had plenty of fun with this. Again, you know, we always have to tie it into Battelle's Gorn addiction. So, you know, the fact that fight felt a little forced to me, but
Was he actually gone this time?
Is he gone? Yeah,
gone, baby, gone.
Oh no,
gone but not forgotten.
Gorn but not forgotten.
Oh, he's super frozen this time.
Yeah, he's out.
Okay,
wow.
It's really weird, but off mic, Janeway just boarded the Enterprise, shot Aaron in the face, and then left.
No,
I have no idea why that
happened. Fuck her up if she takes away the Commodore. Oh my God, I just imagine myself going toe-to-toe with Janeway.
I want to watch that. Okay, Ambassador, overall thoughts and feelings about the episode.
Yeah, this is what I wanted. I wanted this last week. Yay! I wanted to watch a show that had a little adventure. I wanted it to be more interesting. I wanted all of the romance shit to be done. So,
wait, why do you like this week?
We can't all get what we want every time. But I was glad to see that we did something a little bit more, you know, kind of like unique. And I wanted to see a new alien.
Almost had that.
That was a new alien.
No, it was. We didn't really see. I guess that could just be its form. I always imagine like the light beings, like they have some other form that's scarier. But maybe that's just it.
It was the
the blue guy. He wasn't. He was barely in the episode.
He was literal
cannon fodder.
technically, after he's blown into many pieces, he was a lot of different elements of this episode.
That's absolutely fair. We had lots of different of the same alien.
Oh man, what was her?
I have been trying to Google the McEwans. Ian McKellens? Is that what
McCroons.
They are?
McCroons.
The McCroons.
Like a macaron.
Which is confusing because we have the Macrons, who I think were the aliens that are the Green Hand that pinch the Enterprise, or the Macrones is what Kirk calls them. Anyway.
Yeah, I think it was the Macroons.
Yeah, yeah, these were the Macroonians.
And I can't remember Macroons, what my yeah. prediction was, but was it somebody blue?
No, your prediction was for this week, telescopes and contact lenses.
No, I mean the seasonal prediction.
Yeah, but I want to do that silly one first because it's so wrong.
There was a lot of eyeball stuff.
Like the VR.
There was maybe, the VR yeah. situation going on.
That could be yeah. contact lenses. That's close.
It was very contact. There was a lot of eyeball contact. A
lot of eyeball stuff. And if you didn't know, Ian doesn't like teeth stuff or eyeball stuff. So this was a fun one.
Man, Strange New Worlds is not shying away from some of the deeper gore, you know.
Well, that's a streaming thing that I kind of love. The episode length being the length that it needs to be. And the gore, I kind of like that because it gives it a bit more realism for me. But your season prediction, there was no blue person. Your alien prediction was something gilly and green.
Yeah.
He wasn't gilly or green.
He had the lines going on, though.
No, I'm not giving you lines.
He was very teal.
He was blue as a Bolian.
Did you say blue as a what?
Bolian.
Is that a Star Trek
Google
reference?
Google a Bolian. Wow. Yeah, Bolian. Super
wow.
late.
I'm very, very glad that you're in charge of this show because I have no idea what you're talking about, but yeah. That's like a that's a reference that people are going to appreciate.
Do you remember the guy who cuts Worf's hair? He has the scissors and he's always chatting and he's the barber and he like does Picard's hair as well. He does have
no,
hair.
No, I don't.
Okay,
I don't
anyway, Mr.
That.
Mott. Okay. He's a Bolian.
Well, anyway, I think that this was a very interesting episode. It had a lot of activity, had some problem solving, it had a mystery, it had an intensity. And you know, we thought maybe we could be done with Gorn. We know we can't because Batel still has like the Gorn in her. And the previously ons gave us all the information we needed that this was going to be another kind of like mini romances in one, but also Gorn, and that kind of happened in this episode. I mean, we definitely paired everybody off into these awkward sort of sections,
mm-hmm.
but thankfully I didn't feel that they spent a lot of too much time on the romance stuff, and I'm really hoping that the beginning romance stuff where it's Chapel and La'an together is just nipping shit in the bud. Like, I'm really hoping that that is the we're doing something casual. Let's not make this
giving
a big
it some
deal.
Lip service.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, like yeah. The show is saying we're not trying to make this into a thing. And I hope that that's true. It just depends on how much they want to continue to talk about it or not.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, they could do the TNG thing, which was vaguely acknowledge that Worf and Deanna were pursuing a relationship and then never address it pretty much ever again. I don't know if they can help themselves. The vibe that I'm getting, so overall, I really, really liked this episode. This is one I can see myself coming back to for the bottle episode-ness. Danae just punches her mic.
With my glasses.
It's amazing. I can see myself coming back to it for the bottle episode-ness of it all and just being a fun alien architecture adventure. There's an episode of TNG called Contagion where they find this ancient technology and they figure out how it works, and it has like dimensional stuff going on. So it's the kind of TNG episode that I absolutely love. So I really, really enjoyed it. It's almost like the show and the writers have this withdrawal from modern TV being these overall arcs, and they are slowly, gradually weaning themselves off, but then falling off the wagon every now and again. So this is a sensible length, 45-minute episode, with 10 minutes of lip service to where are these relationships at? Won't it be weird if we don't address it? We can't just have these people turn up and not mention their shared relationship trauma. And I think if you cut that literally 10 minutes of that choice out, it's just a regular old episode. So it feels the epitome of tacked on to me because they barely address it throughout the rest of the episode. Spock and Barry, it's not Barry, Spock and Corby basically get along for the entire episode.
Well, I think they're all choosing professional, which is a really a relief.
I'm completely on board with that. It just isn't very interesting now.
No, it isn't interesting, and I hope that they don't keep doing it, because I think just acknowledging it a little bit, if we're going to jump kind of into it, just the relationship, get it out of the way so we can stop talking about
it. Yeah, basically, because that's my the opening note. Yeah.
The biggest frustration for me is Chapel, because without Chapel in this episode being awkward with La'an and Spock, I think it would have been a very normal
show. Spock doesn't feel awkward. La'an doesn't feel awkward until she assumes Chapel is going to have some girl talk with her.
Chapel wants to know how Spock is without just going and talking to Spock. She then finds out that La'an and Spock are kind of spending more time together, and La'an's like, please don't be that girl. This is just casual. And I really appreciated that. But then she goes into the lift and makes it even more awkward, because she sort of isn't okay with the silence. Like, she has really upset Spock by coming back without any kind of notice, and he's just creating this distance, but the professional distance, and she doesn't let that stick, even though, and then there's this comment like, oh, us never talking when there's things to say, and it's just so goading. She just goads him into this, and it made me really disrespect her character. I don't respect her character as much.
Heading that way. Yeah.
Because it just seems very petty, and that's the kind, someone who's wanting to stir the pot and make somebody say something so that there's something to talk about when silence is an option. And that would felt a little bit elementary and very immature. All things that could be done when you're not in uniform at work. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. If this is important enough, then have it off mic.
So that
not on the way to the briefing.
That was the most difficult kind of part. The rest of it, them being paired off together and seeing kind of the dynamic, that felt like it could be just a normal episode of this season of Strange New Worlds, and then we're just moving on. And I liked that. I genuinely didn't mind La'an officially stating her position of the relationship, because that gave me a sense of peace that this was kind of over.
Yeah, that kind of gave me some closure as well. Like, that made a lot of sense. It makes less sense that they felt the need to do it at all, because if you're just going to dismiss it so quickly, I feel like it's leading to a La'an death. Like, what I can't get out of my brain is that we know that Spock is way more shut down by the time we get to TOS. Like, there is he has a lot more walls up than the Ethan Peck Spock that we know now. So I just get this gut feeling that losing La'an is the thing that makes him shut down his humanity. And he's like, fuck that, I'm done. Mm-hmm. You're going to get a much more harsh version
of
me now.
She could die. She could be Gorned.
I mean,
there's so much.
That would track.
So speaking of Gorn, this is another kind of Gorn-esque episode. So on the trail of parts of the storyline that we hoped wouldn't continue, we've got the romance. We've talked about that. We do have the Gorn in this one too. But were you okay with that?
This is going to shock some people. I actually really loved it. I think if we hadn't had any mention of Gorn in the last few weeks, I think everybody would like this a little bit more, but I really like putting the convenience aside, which we both, you just came out and was like, oh, isn't that convenient that you have two possessed beings on the same ship that fucking know each other, of all of the meet cutes. If you put the convenience aside, I think that's really cool. The fact that there is this ancient beef between the, not the Nevada.
The Macroon?
No, the evil aliens.
Well, isn't that what they are?
No, the Macroonians are the ancestors of the blue people who were imprisoning the Vesda. The Vesda are the evil things that the Macroonians were trying to imprison.
Oh boy, I am missing some information here. And I think we do need to get into that. How does it play into the Gorn, though?
Yeah, so I think that way, way, way back in the day, because the Gorn go through these hibernation phases. So they are, we don't know how old they are as a spacefaring species. So I think the idea is that the Gorn have interacted with the Vesda at some point, and there's this ancient beef between them. But a different species also had a beef with the Vesda because they're evil and tried to imprison all of them by the sounds of it. So I think it's just a fluke that this Vesda that's inside Gamble.
Geordi LaForge?
No, inside of Gamble, and the Gorn that's inside of Batel met and had this species reaction to each other. That okay. I really love. I think that's really cool.
So, and the Gorn worked for you because then it was like ancient being versus ancient being both taking up bodies.
Yeah, for me that was exciting because I was like, oh, there's some backstory here that we don't know. It's like when two characters just walk into a room and they recognize each other immediately and there's like some beef, and I like that because we end up skipping over like how do you do and the tension, like having a built-in tension there was really fun. So I like the idea that maybe in the future this is a way to team up with the Gorn against the Vesda if they escape. Released. Yeah, maybe that's how there is some kind of treaty between the Gorn and the Federation.
So I know that my like show recap was like is oftentimes a bit silly, and then of course we had the Commodore buffering in and out, but the real interesting kind of aspect of this episode is this place that they go to. They find an ancient city that has ancient knowledge or ancient abilities that need to be explored and looked into. And they kind of go into this very, well, you heard the Commodore describe it, Temple of Doom sort of vibe, where they have mysteries to solve, puzzles to figure out. But getting through all of that, which we can kind of go through in detail if you want to, I just need to, I'm a little confused.
Yeah,
and
let's
we're
do
talking
it.
About
Hit me.
Vesps and goons and macroons, and I'm
yep.
So I'm gonna call them the Gorn. I know that one by now.
Yeah.
That one's then we've got the macroons.
The macroons.
And those are the bluish guild aliens.
No gills, but yes.
That are at the beginning. And then we have a third alien species, which are the essences trapped in the baubles.
Yeah, the Vesda.
Okay. Okay. And this is a prison for that
no,
race.
No, I'm sorry. Bank pedal. I don't think the way. Yeah, no, you're right. Continue.
Okay, so we are. They haven't found some cool throne room or laboratory or something. They've actually found a prison.
Mm-hmm.
And this race have figured out how to embody other people and take them over. And so
yeah, like
whoever imprisoned them discovered that in order to imprison them, they need to be dimensionally shifting in and out in order to contain them. Is that right?
Yeah, the prison is a dimensional shift. So they found a way to capture them.
Yeah.
And then put them in this room and shift them to a dimension that they can't escape from. So there is a version of that room that can contain them. And I think the visor that Spock puts on is what allows anybody to see where they are. But because they aren't physically in any dimension, they can't escape. So I think that's there's some squiffy science going on. So I don't think they're in any one of the dimensions.
Right.
I think they're caught between many, many, many dimensions, which is why you need the visor to see them.
So when they stumble upon this, there is a moment when one pops up and is like, want to high-five Spock in the face.
Yes. Can
we talk about that for a sec? I know I apologize because I feel like, you know, other podcasts, they might have their shit together and be like, and now we're going to go into the segment called blah, blah, blah. And I'm just like, I gotta fucking do
that. I'm just glad we have something to talk about.
We just watched it. I'm still digesting a lot. So is the impression that you got that these things can float up and like just like their little pods or like little vehicles, and they just can, they can come up and go around wherever they want, but they've been stuck for an eternity here.
Yeah.
And like one just looks up and sees Spock and he, that's the strongest swimmer of the sperm bank. And it just comes up. And then it like sees Spock and it's about to sploosh him in the eye, but then Spock's weird Gorn connection kicks in and is just like, fuck you, dude. And then that guy disappears.
We don't know completely, but that's possible. Like the way I took it was that those beings are inside containment cells themselves and Spock investigating it triggered one of them. It came up, but I could be wrong, but I don't think it could have actually attacked Spock because they're not in the same dimension as him. He could only see them because of the lenses.
Okay. But so he was never in danger of getting gored.
But
like
what it did
the
was, yeah, but what it did was trigger that telepathic imprint that the Gorn left behind.
The protection element.
From
the attack protect thing.
Yeah, yeah. So because he did the mind meld with Batel, that's right. Left a Gorn imprint. That kicked up
right.
With this, the Vesda
it,
appearing.
Like it sensed the Vesda.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And
which
is then paired over on the ship in this epic battle that yes. we'll talk about in a second. Okay, that's yeah. kind of what... So this prison is shifting in and out, but we never figured out what the statue in the middle is, right?
That is the technology that's allowing it to happen, I believe. We don't know exactly what it is. It's probably another child that they've imprisoned and are using as a power source.
They said that it was sentient, right?
Yeah, it's sentient, but that it's also, because it's in like different dimensions and stuff, it might be held in a dimension that they couldn't access.
Oh, Jesus.
So there could be a living being. So the cool thing to me is that Corby, one of the many cool things, Corby finds these relics and assumes that this ancient species managed to find immortality. He mistranslates and misinterprets what the technology is. So they're basing this hypothesis on, or the hypothesis is that they created technology that could make them immortal. And the way they would do that was by harnessing this dimensional shift stuff. But what it's actually doing is just creating a prison. But it could also be both, that the person that is maintaining that prison is immortal, but their one job is to be prison warden for the Vesta.
Okay. Yeah. I did, in the chat, there was a thought about the spheres being different species, and I thought that too. Like, but
oh, interesting.
But it's not. This isn't like a space
prison.
Station prison
yeah.
where anyone can go. This is a specific species that has been systematically destroyed and yes. imprisoned forever because they were so evil.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And the show is definitely trying to push that there are some beings that are just evil. There's not a redemption arc for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's an interesting technique in writing that helps psychologically
mm-hmm.
us to be okay with killing something, because we are mm-hmm. more advanced storytellers than back in the early that's a Klingon shoot it kind of vibe.
Right.
Now we regularly
let
see the backstory of people be explored, the yeah. anti-hero, the reason that this person is bad, so where we can vilify and we can put somebody on the other side mm-hmm. and we can say, yeah, just eliminate this entire group of people. That's not as comfortable for us to do in our entertainment anymore, and it shouldn't mm-hmm. be. But here the writers are like, but maybe we can say it's these people, because that wispy Vespa thing was a nasty being. Like what it said to M'Benga was so fucked up.
Oh, super you know? Fucked up. Yeah.
And there's this sort of ability to sense other dead.
Yes.
You know, like that, because he does it with the prisoners that when he escapes the prison too later. So whatever this species is, you've got Pelia saying it's the heebie-jeebies, super bad vibe. You've got the music telling us it's a bad vibe. You've got examples of it not being a great thing. So I think they're trying to make a non-Gorn enemy sort of looming bad guy that maybe they can kind of all unify and fight under, something like that. I'm not sure. But it was really interesting to spend some time going like, this is an evil situation. This isn't a redeemable group of people that are trapped and needs to be like rehabilitated into society.
Well, and that's the start of the journey for me historically in Star Trek. And it's the scariest bit, it's the most dramatic bit, but where it gets more interesting for me is when you find that species is more complicated. So the Borg are a good example for me, where they are terrifying, great villain. The first episode we see them in, all they want to do is kill the ship or assimilate it, and that continues on. It's not until like Voyager that we find out their methods are horrible, but they're in pursuit of perfection. So it's not necessarily that they're evil. The things they do might seem evil by our standards, but they have a goal that culturally makes sense to them. So I get way more interested when we find out if they're just evil. Like, Pike is right. It is a matter of perspective. Like, why are they evil? Why are they possessing people? A great comment just came up in the chat. Were they evil, or are they evil now because they've been imprisoned? Like, were they imprisoned to be used as an energy source and have now become you to the entire universe? Like, I get way more interested when we know more about them. And I actually hope it's not just they are a skin of evil that just floats around the universe.
And the idea, too, there's that one that was picked up by Bobby No Eyes.
Yep, Gamble.
Mm-hmm. I knew there was a B in there.
Mm-hmm, you got it.
I felt it deep inside.
Yeah. We do know that there are two fewer eyes in there.
Yeah. Ugh. So when he scoops up the orb and it lights up, and the idea later is that something broke out of it, this idea that they do have the ability to break free.
Yeah.
I don't know why it could suddenly do that.
Not clear on that either.
You know, because it had been there for centuries. Did it have to be touched by a physical thing that was living to activate? Like, these are the questions that we will always have if this show never revisits it. And I think that's what I'm feeling as we're talking about it, is this episode left a lot of mystery on the table because it didn't answer a bunch of questions about this thing. It's just we're going to set up a containment unit. Yeah we're going to unify with the McCoys, the Hatfields and the McCoys, and we're going to make sure that nobody just stumbles upon this prison in the future, and hope that they never show up again. But there's just still so many questions. There's so many questions about how all this works.
And I think it's clearly setting something up. We have the last shot of the computer just visually telling us that it scanned the Vesda presence detected, instead of an audio alert that's like, hey, Mbenga, drop the fucking phone. But it's just that classic cliche of like the flash of text on the screen. So we know this is going somewhere. Like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if these aliens link into a species that we already know. But Strange New Worlds loves to, and Discovery, has loved to answer questions set up in the 60s and the 80s by TOS, TNG particularly. So it wouldn't surprise me if it ties into one of those. It's definitely not the last we've seen of the Vesda. I just hope they can... what I hope for is that this maybe isn't revisited until season 4 or something like that. Like, it isn't an arc that keeps reappearing like the Gorn. I hope this is just... Oop, it's still there. Don't forget about this, but it doesn't then dominate the rest of the season.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I have to point out, at the exact same moment, two people have the same exact comment.
Did they Sci-Fi both quote Brony someone?
And CMDR both say, why keep it in the pattern buffer? Why not delete the pattern? It happens all the time on accident. Or why is it still in the pattern buffer? If they purge the buffer, the data is gone. No more bad guys.
That's amazing.
It's so fun.
We're always talking about how signals degrade and patterns degrade if they're held in the buffer for too long. So just let it degrade in there.
It's also wild that this thing was able to break through a barrier, an electric barrier. And so maybe, you know, obviously the container was very specifically built to not allow it to kind of phase through. But it's in a body. It's not like it just kind of came out. Maybe inside of a pattern buffer, that's not really something that can stop. It has to be interdimensional. It has to be time, like a time prison. It can't just be inside of a buffer.
They even said the closest thing we have to a dimensional prison shift thing is the pattern buffer.
And it didn't work but instantly.
It ain't close enough.
No. I wonder what they'll do with it. Obviously, I think this is going to link into Captain Patel saving the day because she's going to be able to sniff, and Spock as well, sniff it out. You know, like, but if it's going from being to being. That was interesting.
Did you like
on Spock?
Yeah, he said he doesn't remember getting that injury. They didn't resolve that, did they?
No. I couldn't tell if it was something like in his body that was sort of like coming out, if his blood was changing, if it was a bruise. I wasn't entirely sure why he had the discoloration going on. This is definitely episode to watch twice, I think. This is maybe the first time I've wanted to watch it twice. And I know like Commodore Dicer really enjoyed the murder mystery, and that would be one to maybe watch again twice because there's so much there.
Yeah.
But this is one where you're thinking, I think I missed something. Like, you're talking about the very end, it reappears into the computer system, and I couldn't tell what was on the screen.
It would, as far as I could see, it was just scanning it. So I think it's now in the guts of the... I think it's migrated from the computer buffer, from the transporter buffer, into the computer systems.
Okay.
Is what I'm thinking. And I'm just being updated by the live chat, and I think I'm just going to leave this in. The cut was resolved because he cuts his hand later, and it's a reverse cause and effect thing. So he cuts himself, but the injury appears earlier.
When did he cut himself?
Towards the end of the episode. That's when he figures out that cause and effect is reversed.
Oh,
but we both
okay.
switched. We both missed it.
So, what I thought it was related to the Gorn situation, because when the Gorn kind of like pops out of his consciousness and is repelling the presence of this other being, I thought maybe that was a sign that he is Gorning.
Oh,
you know what I mean? Like,
no, yeah.
So to know that there's a cut and he's not, that actually brings me a sense of peace.
Yeah,
so,
a cut that hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, so, I wouldn't have known that. Thank you
live
chat
for saving our butts. Okay, but
he cut himself under the captured kid statue. Oh, thanks, Mark. Yes. Yep. Okay. Yes, I do remember him reaching underneath there now. That makes sense. Yes, under the panel. Thank you, guys. That clears that part up. That was one of the lingering, like, what the fuck is going on here moments.
Right. Yeah, completely agree.
But yeah, so I think those are the two big things that like we kind of hope weren't coming back, and they aren't necessarily coming back for the wrong reasons. I do find, like you, Ian, the Gorn part of this mystery interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we kind of established the base of all of the alien stuff, can we shift over into the puzzle of like this place? Like, what did you think about like the space that they were in, the actual building, the rooms, the timey-wimey stuff? Like, did that work for you?
Well, interestingly, my prediction was to have a kind of interstellar type thing where they're in different time zones.
You did.
Figuring out different puzzles and working together.
You did.
And I kind of got that. Yeah, it's not time, it's just planes of existence. It is a trope, but it's a trope for a reason. It's so fun. Like, it is so fun to push the crew into different dimensions, have them solve the puzzle together. The puzzle itself, other than the cause and effect thing, which is fun and great, they did very little with it other than an Indiana Jones homage, obviously, with the invisible bridge. The rest of the puzzle and the pieces did very little for me. I think overall, it's a beautiful set. I love the design. I love the frozen in time creature thing that they had.
Yeah, that was really cool looking.
I love the foundational bricks of everything here, but the mystery didn't deliver for me and has some like pretty fundamental holes inside of it. I wish we could have done more with them being in different dimensions and more with the cause and effect thing. Like, you can have cause and effect, the episode of TNG of that title, does so much fun with cause and effect and leaving clues for each other. If they figure out that cause and effect thing earlier, you really can do this cool looping thing where you end up helping your past selves without realizing. And it doesn't do that for me.
No.
I don't know. The mystery was a bit of a letdown for me.
Yeah, they kind of spent more time trying to argue about why they should or shouldn't be there at all instead of getting into it. But then also, like at the end, when all the pieces kind of work together, you sort of know they're going to do something. And it was very convenient that all the pieces were there at the same time, including the ones that centuries ago somebody kind of dropped off. Like, but Chapel and the Dr. Lubbins.
Corby?
Mm-hmm.
Corby.
Dr. McLubbins.
Yeah, there we go.
I think the idea was that they had seen different clues that sort of led them to believe that there was a place where it all came together and it originated from. Is that the fourth species that we don't know a lot about? The ones that ended up trapping
Vesper folks? This happened so long ago that the blue aliens, the Ian McKellians, have no idea. They have like stories and suspicions, but it seems like there is an ancient species that they are the descendants of. They're the ones that have the advanced technology and trapped the Zebedees.
So the idea is that the Macroons are the ones who trapped the Vespers.
No, an ancient ancestor of theirs. Could be the same, but it seems to be they're an offshoot.
Their
lineage.
Centuries old lineage.
Maybe millennia before. They share the same planet. Could be a different species.
Okay. And maybe the people that were there, this is my theory, the ones that were in the room that had like starved, they were delivering another prisoner. That's why they had the materials with them.
Yeah, I think there's a chance that they were destined to be locked in there. So I think you're not getting out for fear of one of the aliens escaping. So I think they died at their posts, I think.
But they didn't deliver the prisoner.
Was that the one that escaped? Oh, maybe. What killed them then?
So either was someone stealing and they found one and they were trying to get it out and then they couldn't get out.
But they had the visors, which made me think that they're the aliens that created the technology. Because doesn't Spock pick a visor from one of their bodies?
Yes, he does.
Yeah. So I thought they were the aliens that created the technology.
Yeah, me too.
But I like the thieving idea.
Well, there was a mention of them potentially stealing some relics or something like that. But I was very confused.
Well, that would also explain why that one alien escapes and attacks Gamble, because maybe it's... integrity field was weakened during that theft or escape attempt.
It could be. But they didn't make it out because why?
Oh, because they couldn't solve the puzzle.
And the puzzle was that they had to walk over empty space?
Yeah, that and or the fact that you have to leave the person that got pinpricked has to leave. So if the person that got pinpricked left first, they're fucked. Because they can't get to the... So maybe they saw one of their buddies get vaporized and were like, we can't leave until we figure out this puzzle, and they never did.
So I think, okay, and the puzzle also is like they all were technically in the same room, but they wouldn't have necessarily known that. And so if they didn't have all the pieces together, like the ring and the thing, they wouldn't have been able to all reunite to talk to each other. Mm-hmm. They would have been separated entirely and not known how to get out of the room.
Okay. Especially if they didn't have the handy video documentarian with them or the communicators.
Right. So
if they didn't have any of that, they would have been screwed.
Right.
Yeah. So if they don't have, like you said, the puzzle pieces.
Right. And they didn't have the ring. Okay. So now it's all coming together. So yeah, I think that did work for me. And I also liked the idea that they were like learning about existing in multiple places at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
That was really interesting too.
Yeah, really interesting. I just wish they'd done more with it.
What was the comment that Chapel makes is something like, yeah, I don't know what it means.
I have no idea what that means. It was like molecular phase shifting through dimensional things. Yeah, I'm just like, I don't know what that means.
I don't know if the space worked for me like I wanted it to. Like, I think it was a little bit lacking. I don't know if it was maybe the mystery, like you kind of talking about wanting to have more of that. Kind of
I want more of the wacky science. I want more of the cause and effect wackiness. Because if you can deliberately write that out, like Interstellar does, like cause and effect does.
Yeah.
Oh man, you have an episode that I'm gonna fall in love with. It's so satisfying. But it really was a little bit lip service-y.
It seemed like they were getting through it really quickly when they needed to, and then they were stalled when they needed to.
Yeah.
But obviously. This is a hard. I'm super nitpicking here, but they get there and it's because they deflector dish, co beam, a transparent ghost marble.
No.
That's what reveals the doors in the first place.
I think, and this is where I'm just like my Star Trek brain is just gonna take over here. I'm just smiling so big. I think the deflector beams are being used as a mine, as a mining, digging, tunneling device. So I think it's zapping the rock and like dissolving it. And it's been calibrated because they've scanned the structure, I think. They've calibrated it to take away the exact amount of rock that it needs to take away.
Oh.
And the little calibrators on the
pylons.
The pylons on the planet help the deflector dish to attenuate properly.
Oh, that's cool. And they did mention something about that. There was a lot of talk going on and I wasn't quite sure what was happening. So, okay, so you think that they tunneled?
Yeah, I think they tunneled the rock away with fancy deflector science.
I thought it was a hologram type thing. Ah, that's cool.
That's what
cool.
I thought for
that's
a second.
Cool. Okay,
no.
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I would have, now I want to watch it again and be like, that's fucking cool. Instead of going, okay, we're just magically revealing secret doors now.
The other thing I love about that scene is the clunky fucking technology. Like those clunky.
Oh, the pylons?
Telescope pylons, straight out of TOS. Like I love them so much.
Yeah,
like,
you're right.
When they, I think it's in the cage, which is the pilot of the original series, they bring down these like heavy duty phaser rifles. And they're these clunky things and they're on like a strut and a platform thing and they just look ridiculous. And it looked like this technology as well. But and then couple that with the ship just firing a fuck you deflector beam from orbit is like everybody should have been beamed up back to the ship. That thing is fucking dangerous. But
you're right.
Loved all
of
that.
There should have been a little bit more like protection in place.
Way more.
I think.
Don't cross the red line. Like this is way dangerous. So much radiation.
Yeah, I think now that I'm remembering, the pylons in my TNG are just rods. Anytime that they deployed a pylon, it was just a rod. It didn't have a dish attached to it.
It's the transporter amplifiers are the classic one that are just, they'll have little forked legs that they just plonk into the ground.
Yes, that's
and
it.
They'll help the transporter beam work.
Yeah. That's fun.
Pattern enhancers. Thank you, live chat.
Oh man, so much chatter happening on important information.
Oh, it's important to get the name right and it was escaping me, so thank you very much.
Well, I'm glad to talk about that because that does make that part cooler. But then we get into the inside and it was the set was really interesting and dark and twisted, very prison-esque once you say it. Like, oh, of course it's a prison. It's very dark and stuff.
Yeah, hindsight being 2020.
They have to like prick your finger and then they scan you. So it was very advanced technology that was still working even though no one had been there for a hot minute.
Yeah, I did kind of like how Gamble was being extremely expositional, but was tying the science into the mythology. So he would come in and say, it's ancient aliens, which is obviously something we as a species seem to be obsessed with, and blood magic. Whereas it's any form of technology advanced enough can look like magic. So yeah, it looks like magic to us, but for them it's just, we're using hemocraft and using actual blood to science the things. I don't know how human blood works on the thing, but I don't think that matters. I think it's just any kind of blood lets you in.
I wonder if it's, again, because it's a prison, it was like, hey, if you've captured one of these people, bring them to us because we don't care what race you are. We want to get
maybe
out.
That's it.
And it was maybe like just this hunt for the species.
Yeah.
And that does make me very curious about the species.
I would love to know. I'm actually more interested about them than I am the Vesda, because I think we could learn a lot about the Vesda through their captors and the species that decided to imprison them.
It really was an episode of Stop Touching Things, though, right?
That was literally my next point, was how distracting was that for you?
Very. Yeah, I think that there is something really important about someone's drive, like when they're
motivation
blinded by the discovery, they're blinded by, I've been looking into this for so long. I can't stop myself from pressing forward dangerously because the lust for the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I did pick that up from their conversations. I felt like the camera really watched Chapel and McLubbin's Doc Lubbins pretty well. You know, you could really see the conflict of the desire to acquire versus the safety of the crew. And we got to feel the tension of that, obviously, when she talks to Spock. But so I think why they would be, I guess, a little bit stupid with some of the things that they're touching. I don't understand why little Geordi LaForge did what he did. But I can't imagine, yes, it's your first away mission, but I can't imagine that you would, as a person who studies medicine, touch anything that has been on a dead being for centuries that could have, like, you didn't even scan it first.
Yeah, there's a lot of, and some of these tropes have been embedded into pop culture by Star Trek. Like, don't touch anything on an away mission. Wear your spacesuits. Doesn't make for great TV, but you should all be in spacesuits for this. That would have absolutely protected him from an eyeball gouging. So they observe every single trope and ignore them. Like, the danger is brought to Spock's attention, mm-hmm. and he dismisses it and carries on. The obsession, like you said, has got to be followed, and I guess they're staying just within the parameters of safety. But it loses me a bit when they see that Blue Man got vaporized for leaving. Spock figures out, oh, we have to stick with Chapel. What's the very next thing they do? They decide to go in two by two instead of a group of six. Like, that splitting up, I was so distracted by it. When you know, like, splitting up is always a bad idea, but Chapel you've just figured out that her blood is the thing that's keeping you alive.
Mm-hmm.
They are beyond fortunate that they didn't all get zapped as soon as they were separated from her. So it sounds nitpicky, but when you do a deep dive on an episode, that is distracting.
Yeah, I think the traps of the space were distracting. Also, a little bit of the set design was distracting, because I could see in the background that there were mechanisms that were moving, and it just seemed like it was so big and mm-hmm. huge, and there seemed to be so much more to explore, but technically they really just stayed in one space the whole time. Yes. Like, this set was the door going into the building, that first chamber where the archaeologists or the people before, the grave robbers or whatever, had died centuries ago. And then the next room, which was essentially just an echo of the first room, but with mm-hmm. the actual, like, being kind of on the yeah. pedestal. So, but in the background, there was a lot, but they were able to just stay very focused on what was directly in front of them and not, like, looking. It's one of those things where it's like, if you've made it in post, which obviously they have, did they not know what they were going to do? Could they not have, like, I don't know, had someone go, echo, echo, like, just some kind of an acknowledgement that the space was so much larger than just the dais that they were interacting with. Yeah. I don't know. There was a lot of just, we're doing this because this is what the scene is. And then we get to, like, the bridge at the end, you know, the I don't know, the leap of faith or whatever you want to call it.
I also have a suggestion that was incredibly distracting to me. Could you not just tiptoe? Because this isn't a leap of faith situation like it is in Indiana Jones. Like, you have to believe, like, the bridge is there. You just can't see it.
You just
got to
walk on it.
So tiptoe. Just get a finger and press it, because it's still going to be there. There is no risk here at all. It's not based on your belief.
Controversial idea.
Uh-huh.
Take the skull off the guy that's dead and roll it. You know,
we have
options here.
I guess for
take your clothes off.
I mean, that is always the option.
Lay it down. See if there's, like, a little bridge. Or is the idea that, like, she has to physically touch it to activate it. Put your hand down. Get on all fours.
Just throw something. Throw a rock at it. The
pee
other
on
thing
it.
Is, maybe it is intent. Maybe you have to walk out with the intent of pressing the button. Because if you don't walk out with that commitment, it means you don't press the button, which doesn't bring the bridge. That's the only... But they don't do a great job of explaining that. Like,
well,
you have to believe
that's
Peter.
But that's the part of it that makes it a religion instead of a prison. You know what I mean? This isn't a prove yourself and prove your valor before you
there's
can
no
leave.
Prize at the end that you have to prove yourself to.
This is just a door opens and a door closes, and this is how you're going to open and close the door. And so if this civilization that was trapping these Vespa wispy things, like, they would have all known, okay, when you go in, you have to have the tablet and the ring to get out. And whoever scans is the person. This is a one-person job. One person goes in, drops it off, one person leaves.
Yeah.
And then over time, that knowledge is lost. And that's kind of an interesting concept, but, like, it's just a door. It's not a, hey, you have to leave with the goodwill of mankind and a promise to hunt all evil forever and bring back anyone and trap them here for all eternity situation.
Yeah. And the most wild part of all of that for me is all of the different parts have ended up on different planets.
Yes.
So what if he hadn't got all of them? They are screwed. If he doesn't have all of the parts 100%. Or there's another part missing.
That's exactly right.
And that does spoil the mystery for me. Like that, there is more chance in this than there is skill. And the skill that's there are huge, huge leaps. So
huge.
As we get to the end of this episode, as we say pretty much every week, this is very raw. Like this is raw feeling straight off of the back of it. I like this episode superficially. I'm going to have to stop myself from digging much deeper if I ever come to rewatch it.
Yeah, that's a good point. Because just like last week, I kind of checked out a bit, a bit. It does. It's kind of at some point you're going, this is going to solve itself. Let's just, you know, move on. I don't need to see how they're going to do it anymore because it doesn't really need to be anything more than they just figure out a way to walk out the door and leave.
A great example of what I'm thinking of, to your point, Danae, is another TNG episode will always have Paris. This might be the most episodes of TNG I've mentioned in one episode. It's really the best of both worlds. But in We'll Always Have Paris, there is this time shenanigan thing that happens. And there are, I think, 6 different daters all in a line. And all of them can talk to each other. And he has to put this rod into place at the right time. And he's talking to himself and he's just like, which one of us is the one that has to do it? Because if one of us does it too early or too late, we're the wrong ones. And then one of the daters figures out, it's me because of this reason, this reason, this reason. And then he puts it in and the other daters do it at the same time and it all works. And I'm just like, I like shit like that. I love it when you do weird timey-wimey stuff that actually tracks and follows. Like that can be the episode for me. But I think this wanted to introduce a super terrifying villain. It wanted to do relationship stuff. It wanted to do Indiana Jones archaeology stuff. It wanted to do Dungeons and Dragons puzzle stuff. And then it didn't focus down on what Ian wants the most, which is time science. Would be my one sentence review.
There's always going to be some source that we think does whatever a little bit better. But for this show, I still feel like this was a fun episode. It was really fun to watch and be reminded about what space exploration can be like and what it looks like when you've got Starfleet trying to accomplish a goal where it's on a border that they have to get permission from the locals to kind of even do it. And it seemed like there was a lot more to explore. This could have been a movie. This could have been really exploring more and more and more. And it leaves me with a lot of questions, and they're not the Gorn questions, but it is a bit like that because there's an enemy now. There's this unknown now. There's somebody lingering on the ship. So let's talk about the ship a little bit. I would love to hear your thoughts on the fight between Batel and Geordi No Eyes.
I like what they're doing with the action. This wasn't at the level of the Kenfori Klingon lady and Mbenga fight, but it was still watchable. It made sense. And I loved the immediate like Winter Soldier activation thing that happened. As soon as she entered the room, the Gorn just kicks in. And like I said earlier, that immediately I was like, beef. Like that alien has been triggered. Patel's alien has been triggered. There's something going on here, and I want to dig into that. I now want to know what the Gorn story with these aliens are. Like, I wouldn't object to an ancient Star Trek TV show that doesn't even have humans in it because we're still in the caveman ages or whatever. We're still like in Victorian times, and it's just the alien landscape of the Alpha Quadrant before humans ever got to it. Like, there's clearly so much potential. Even pre-humans arriving. So yeah, that I really, really enjoyed that. How about you, Ambassador? What all on the ship interested you with the mystery as it unfolded?
I think too much about these things, you know, as I was trying to figure out, is she the mother of the Gorn? Is she going to be changing into this like Gorn form so that we can have an example or answer as to why, you know, so I overthink these things and I admit that, but why do they need this to be part of what they're doing this season? And I think you mentioned something earlier that there could need to be some sort of reason to align with the Gorn to fight another power.
Mm-hmm.
And now that they know how to awake the Gorn cicada rhythm thing and they can like call them forth from their birthing, they know where to go.
Yeah.
You know, they know how to get into the suns and like open it all up and wake them all up, tap, tap, tap.
Wake the Gorn and say, we need your help, guys.
So if they're trying to put the Gorn to rest in the season, maybe that's the big bad in season four, right? This sort of issue that is going to be, you know, addressed, because in all likelihood, we have a bad ghost figure that is now in a ship that will probably be trying to find a way into a host body or something so that it can go and free its brethren. And that's a really interesting possibility. So they have to then, the show has to kind of give us a sense of hope. And that they're doing that with Batel. And that's where I land after thinking about it for just since watching the show a little bit ago, is she is that connecting bridge between being able to say there's something that's strong enough to fight it.
Yeah.
We just have to go like let them out so that the two big giants can go. It's like stumbling upon when Star Trek introduces a god character. It's like, well, who can go against a Q? Like, where is the balance when we're like little tiny little people, you know? And
it's
then,
such a dangerous thing to introduce because nothing matters at that point.
It's interesting.
Snap of a finger, everything disappears. Literally.
It's interesting. Yeah, exactly. So I think it was really interesting to show that it is something that is so, they say it a lot, ancient and old, beyond our comprehension, built into the DNA that they can sense each other's pheromones or presences or whatever. And it's also important to remember that Gamble, right? The No Eye Gamble.
Yep.
Bobby No Eyes. He was dead upon arrival.
Oh,
right?
I kind of love that. It's like an echo of his consciousness that he's just wearing a gamble suit. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. And so we need to know that that's true, because when they're like kind of like fighting at it and going at each other, like we need to understand that there's not really a saving point. Like
he's brain dead.
We don't have a, can we save him like we saved Batel moment.
Mm-hmm.
This is a ghost figure instead of a physical Gorn host. They're two different species. And so though they're piloting a body, let's pause for a second. The Vespers are piloting a body, their body snatcher.
Yeah.
But the Gorn are not. They just want to grow their young in a body.
Just.
So they're not taking over a person. Batel is theoretically, I think, or 100%, the only human to survive.
I think so,
thing. So she's
incubated.
Right. So she has got her own kind of battle going on to not basically let it take her over and then rip her apart. Because it's not like... She has a Gorn inside of her still, right? If I'm understanding correctly, or she's been impacted.
There is some DNA. It's the DNA.
Okay.
There is DNA left over that is entwined with her DNA.
Yeah. She's gonna have a reptile baby. That's just the only thing.
I think she's gonna create the Gorn as we know them in TOS, and they're gonna look ridiculous.
I think about this too much.
It's amazing.
But from a storytelling perspective, I think what they're doing is really interesting. The fight worked for me because it was such a shock. Like, there was a couple, but like, oh my God moments when...
Yeah, she's moving like not a human.
Yeah, like when the Vesper disintegrates, it's like, holy shit. When the eyeballs are gone, oh my God. And then all of a sudden, they're just like trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
I personally liked it because I like to see a woman fucking go to battle.
She had him on the ropes.
Yeah, that was fun.
Love that.
I really liked
absolutely love it. How do you feel about Pellia being the one that pulls the trigger right at the end in the shootout? The hostage situation.
It needed to happen. And
I don't think Mbenga can take much more.
Well, I think for me, when you say Pellia, she is so quirky and interesting. And there she gives this massive speech at the end that's incredibly dramatic. And then she's... And then she's asked the cameraman, do you want me to repeat that? Like, were you getting that on film? So I'm like, wait, is she seriously talking about a great evil, or was that all for show? And I think she's just okay with fucking with people and killing people, although that wasn't a person, you know, that was a decision that needed to be made. So I don't know. I think it gives her some depth that I feel like that character kind of needs, that she's been around a long time. She knows mm-hmm. a lot. She can kind of both like fuck something up and make a hard decision. She can teach and she can also, you know, be dramatic and stupid with her like little speech that she was doing. I was like, wow, they're really laying it on thick. And then she turns to the camera guy and I thought, oh, okay. So this is her humor, right?
Yeah, for me, it was beautifully on brand, but I do think there was truth in what she was saying as well, and also enjoying playing it up. But when she, who is 400 years old, I think, possibly more, says that this is ancient and old, oh, fuck, you better listen. Like, she's seen enough to know what's terrifying. So yeah, I think her incorporation into this episode was great, because we would have been like, hey, why don't you just ask Pellia? Maybe she has some idea what mm-hmm. this is. So having her insight was, I think they're using her very, very well.
I do too. And when she's not there, they say, you know how she is. She takes a little tight, you know, she takes a break or whatever. Yeah. So she's, I like that character. Think she's doing what she needs to do. And in that moment, when he's holding, when the body snatcher, Bobby, is pointing a gun, or phaser, I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Trio, we've got, wasn't it Kirk, Scotty? Was that Kirk and Scotty and Pellia?
It was, you've broken my brain. Yes. Okay. It was Kirk's brother, Kirk.
Oh, Kirk's brother.
That's not James Kirk. Okay.
That's brother Kirk.
God damn it. What's his name? It's not Gary.
Mustache Kirk.
Someone's going to say it in the live chat. I want to get there first. It's Billy Bob Kirk. It's Sam Kirk.
Okay. So that's right. Thank you. Okay. Chat. And you're like, okay, I don't think they're going to do that. I don't think this is when he dies. But Pellia was up on the block for me going, if there's a character that's about to be gone, it's this one. And so.
Not yet.
That showdown was very, very interesting. And also, thank you to the live chat for reminding Pellia is 2,500 years old, not 400. And that gives her even more credential for she's 100%. Never seen anything this old before. So it's very, very old.
She's old. She's fucking old, which is amazing. I love it. Something I did want to bring up super duper quickly is that you obviously do not know this, but it is interesting to me that Corby's obsession with immortality ties into what we know about his character in the original series and where he ends up. So I just want to say...
For those of you who know those things.
For those of you that know. So I do just want to say I appreciate that we are seeing the seeds of that obsession start here, and it's a nice way to inform where he ends up. Like, if you're going to bring back an original series character and give them some depth, this feels very true to that. So I just appreciated that.
There you go.
Anything else before we do some emails? Pips. How many pips?
Man, I think I'm going to go 3.5, but I don't, I think like I'm really struggling to give it 4. So I'll do 3.5.
Yeah, I'm going to go 3, which is on track with my entire season, to be honest. It's a 3. If you get the extra time elements for me, cut the relationship stuff, it's a 4 for me, and it's a classic TNG era type of, TOS era type of Star Trek for me. That is always my benchmark. What I am, me personally, as a fan, and why I love Star Trek so much, is TNG. So if I can recapture any TNG in 2025, then I am an absolute easy mark. And this got a good chunk of the way there. And I think this season's getting closer to it than any other modern Star Trek that I've seen so far. So yeah, 3.5 for me.
Yeah. And we didn't really talk too much about Uhura in this one. I just, before we go on, you said, is there anything else?
Yeah, absolutely.
I really enjoyed her, and I think she should have had more to do.
Her and Una tragically wasted. Like, I want more Uhura, Una episodes, please. And thank you right now.
I love, like, after that revelation about La'an's, like, arc, I really am enjoying her, which makes me scared.
Yeah, they're going to kill her. I think she's doing great this season. I really, really, I think she's, of most of the cast, she's found a comfort level with her character that I'm really enjoying. Her.
I believe that she is intense. I believe that she's like, I'd rather be doing something than nothing. You know, she just has this energy that I really appreciate. So and Uhura was like, almost like the stupid girl that doesn't know how to have the attention of a guy kind of a thing this episode. Weird, and I just didn't like that. Yeah. She was just distracted by the presence of the of Ortega's brother mm-hmm. doing the film, but I don't know. She did have a good moment though in this episode that I really enjoyed, which was like the calming down and just how to kind of get through the intensity and thinking about her in season one, you mm-hmm. know, and the intensity she felt on these away missions.
Yeah.
It was really neat. And I, you know, when they do the previously ons, that should have been part of it from season one, her struggling with all the pressures to perform. Yeah,
that's the recap I need.
And yeah. and this could have been a really interesting arc, if you think about it, for Uhura to have more confidence and just kind of know what she's doing. And she's just firmly a comfortable character for us to have on screen because she knows what she's doing and she's dependable and she's intelligent and she's present. And here they kind of just regulated her as like the guy's sidekick this time. And
yeah, and there's
I
a
didn't
lot of,
really enjoy that.
A lot of language stuff that was needed in this episode. And she did some of it, but that's where she, her character could really sing. Yeah, there we go. All right, where do you want to go this time for emails, Ambassador?
Oh.
Bear in mind, I have to change this in the description every week.
Oh, you do?
I'm updating wherever we go is what I put in the description.
Okay, chat, tell me a place to take us because I need to know some kind of a weird place in the
They're going to say Cetacean Ops. Dollars to donuts, they will say Cetacean Ops. Somebody is already typing it now.
I want to go to the Brussard Collection.
That's amazing.
I don't know what that is. I think it's over.
We're going to go to the Bazaard Collection. No, you know you're gonna find this hilarious. Hold it up again.
I'm going to...
Hold it up.
Uh-huh.
It's the Red Bits.
Oh, hell fucking yes. To the Red Bits!
Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your messages from Discord, Twitch, and, well, email, and sometimes YouTube.
It's very red in here.
We have a message from Mrs. Zero on the Discord, who tagged you specifically, Danae. At Danae, hey, on Voyager Year of Hell Part 2, the episode that we covered, you mentioned that you have kept your daughter's teeth.
Why would I be talking about that?
Was
it prevalent to the story or was it in the outtakes? You know?
I believe that this is because the commander of the timeship that was trying to rescue his wife kept the hair of his
Oh,
wife.
Yes. That's right. Yes. And he had to let it go.
There we go.
That's right.
Oh,
God. What is this question going to be?
Mrs. Zero is the wife of Josh Zero, who's also on the Discords and regular listener. she continues, I kept our son's teeth as well, but I found at a local craft store an ornament you can put that stuff in. So I just put his teeth in it and hang it every year. Josh and Kid Zero think it's weird, but love heart, love heart.
Oh my God. No, I think this is amazing.
I think it's incredible. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what people find when they go through like the human civilization later. And they come across
You have
their
to extrapolate
home.
From this one example. This is what all of humanity
it's
did.
It's just the Zero household. And then they think that all of humanity like put the teeth on the tree. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm down for this. I'm wondering what to do with it. But then I came across this person who will, you can send them materials and and they put it into like this device and pressurize it and turn it into diamonds. And so the diamond is coming from whatever you send in. So a lot of times it's just like, you know, in a memory of a pet or even a person. So if you can send as much material, then they can like, and I'm like, maybe I should do like a teeth diamond. You know what I mean? Like, here's my kid's teeth. And then I can just wear it as jewelry. And everyone would think, oh, look at that beautiful, you know, diamond necklace that you're wearing. Yeah. And I'm like, it was my kid's teeth.
No context. No, presented without comment.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. Do you have anything, Ambassador?
This one's from Flyboy. It's for Chris Myers.
Mm.
He's used minimal screen time scattered over a few episodes to give us a fleshed out admiral and likable character. And he also nails the Vesda in this one. Is that the person that played the alien?
No, that's Gamble, I believe.
Oh, because he was he was acting out as the bad guy.
Yeah, he was the Vesda.
That was so cool. You're right.
I think he did great.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely agree.
Really, really sad to see him go. But I have to say, at the top of the show, who did I ask was going to be dead on this one?
We nailed it.
You nailed it.
Oh, no, I did. No, yeah, you asked me. And in the episode, I was like, well, we got an opening log from him. He seemed to like saying the word Enterprise. He is dead.
Yeah. Should drop that one maybe a little bit too much.
Got an email, got a message on multiple Discord channels from Daniel, who, and I love this observation, we questioned last week where the bartender was, three-armed bartender, in last week's episode. Three-armed bartender was the eyeball person on the TV show. So, you know, there was an alien on the screen that was holding her own eyeballs.
Yeah.
That's the same actor that plays the bartender with three arms.
That's so funny.
Of course it was. Like, that just makes so much sense now.
I totally missed that.
Totally missed it. Love that.
Which is on the show for not making that more obvious.
Yeah.
This one's from Mark. Moopsie versus Ancient Evil versus Captain Gorn hybrid.
Oh, man. I mean, Moopsie. Well, no, because I think once the bones are gone, the Vesda now can't
eat Vesda.
Possess Moopsie. Yeah. So I think we just made Moopsie even more fucking deadly.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Shit.
It's like a Vesda Moops.
Moops. Yeah. Voopsie.
Voopsie.
Amazing. I'm going to do a couple of pip rankings. Flyboys pips for 3.5 pips. Some of my favorite Star Trek episodes are what I call the What the Hell is Happening Here episodes. And this is a good one. 0.5 pip off was for the high school drama. Yeah, completely agree with that. And Sci-Fi Brony says 3.5 out of 4 as well. Hated this episode, had any relationship and Gorn stuff, but the alien stuff both on the ship and on the planet was super fun and cool. Completely agree. If only they could do everything the way we wanted them to do it and shed all of the relationship shit. But there we go. There we go. Anything else, Ambassador, before we wrap this shit up?
Yeah, this one's from Phil, who says, think it's funny for a Vulcan that in the future will transfer his consciousness to a human, which is Bones, talks about consciousness surviving after death in this one.
That's an excellent point, because at this point, they know about, or Vulcans absolutely know about Katras and how you can, the idea is that a Vulcan never really dies. Their consciousness is uploaded to this holy place on Vulcan so that their memories and experiences can be preserved in that sense. So it's interesting that Ethan Peck's Spock is so objectionable to that idea. Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Really good point.
Probably very purposeful as well. I think we're seeing the young Spock. So as he ages and has more experience, maybe it becomes, like, he'll have more experiences and more examples of consciousness shifting and everything. This one was from Sci-Fi Brony. When Captain Patel says exterminate him, is she not Gorn, but a
Khaled?
And I didn't understand this one, so I wondered if you would think that that was interesting.
Well, a Khaled is the Daleks from Doctor Who.
Oh, uh-huh.
The aliens that are inside the Daleks are Khaleds.
Oh, Khaleds, this is a crossover Daleks joke. This is a crossover joke. I get joke. You. Yeah. Okay.
Love it.
Nice one. CMDR Smith says, away team rules. Step 1, scan it. Step 2, pick it up with tongs.
Yeah.
Step 3, consider touching it. Step 4, dismiss idea of touching it and put it in a container.
So true. All while wearing like multiple layers of space suits as well. Amazing.
So good.
Okay. Well, next week's episode, Ambassador, I am possibly more excited for this episode than any other because of potentially what it implies might be happening. It is the Saylat who ate its tail. Do you remember what a Saylat is?
I mean, considering how good I did with the Red Room Collector.
The Bizarre Collectors. Yeah.
I can try to figure it out.
Don't Google what a Saylat is.
Not? This is like the snake that ate his tail, right?
Maybe.
That idea maybe. That like you, it's like the never-ending circle.
Yep. You, an Ouroboros, you know what a Saylat is. S-E-H-L-A-T. You've encountered a Saylat before.
I have?
Yes, you have.
Shit. Is it a child going to school that already has the sniffles and when I see them in the hallway, they run to me, give me a hug, and wipe their nose on my shirt?
Nope.
Okay, well, I have encountered that.
Close.
Oh, is it a cat?
It's not a cat. Oh. It is, it could be related to a cat thematically.
Okay, thematically related to a cat, but it's its own tail. Dragon? They're like kitties, but with scales.
Not a dragon. But closer than a cat.
Closer than a cat. closer than, because there's because lizardy is very lizardy.
It looks more like a dragon, but acts more like a cat.
Okay, I'm done with this idea, but I'm just glad it's not a Gorn.
You've got an entire week to figure it out, Ambassador. Anything you want to plug before we sign off?
No, just a reminder that for Captain's Pod podcast listeners, nothing is going to change for you as we shift away from the CinemaSins podcast network and go off on our very own. You can read all of the information in the comment section to kind of find any details if you're curious about it. So let's say you want to join the Discord. You will be joining a different Discord to find the Captain's Pod crew. Let's say you want to go to the live show, you'll go to a different place to watch the live show, and all of that will be in the links of the podcast. And for anyone who's watching live, you can see it on your screen. And again, just check on the comments and all the info is there. And if you've got any questions, you can email us. The new email is ian@ianandanae.com.
Yes, or head over to the Ian and Danae Patreon, which is Ian and Danae. And you can sign up for free updates over there as well. That's where we'll be putting lots of our content. If you want more exciting things from Ian and Danae, like 3D printing shit. I 3D printed a pad from Star Trek. Anyway, I'm Captain Ian, and it's just fun time from me.
What?
It's just fun time from me.
Just fun time?
Yeah.
That's what
Laan says at the beginning. It's just fun times.
Oh, okay. That's a good one. Let me figure out what mine's going to be.
She's just going to rewatch the episode. Give her a minute.
All right. And it's only with blood given freely from me.
God, live long and prosper.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Captain's Pod. If you'd like to get in touch with the podcast, you can send us an email to ian@ianandanae.com. And if you want to support the show and get the episodes early, you can go to our Patreon. That's patreon.com/ianandanae. If you want to catch the show live, we have those links down in the description for YouTube and Twitch. And then I think I'm supposed to close this hailing frequency, so bloop bloop, we're out.
Bloody Nora. All right, we've got 10 minutes to do the intro.
Did you already move over my microphone, my mama?
I sure fucking did.
Look at you being a star.
Being
a rock star. Look at you, you're doing the show, you're doing the damn thing. I just want to let you know that I'm immediately taking this drawer over as the drawer.
What drawer? Because it's within hand dumping reach.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so like my weekly task will be to unfuck this drawer.
Yeah.
I usually do a pretty good job in Minecraft. I feel like it's my opportunity to sort of like prove to myself that I can.
Yeah, it's weird. You're very organized in Minecraft.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fresh start. It's like I want to do well. I want to prove to myself that I can go back and finish those deeply frustrating organizational projects that are debilitating. But I also know it's just a digital world and I can just delete it and it's not a big deal, you know?
That's true.
But when in my real life,
lower, it makes it easier. Yeah, I get that.
There was a time when I overpurchased Clorox wipes.
Wipes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah.
And then I told myself, you know, I can't buy any more until they're all gone. I did the same with pens and I did the same with flour.
Yeah, you know,
like,
I mean...
Like I went overboard.
Yeah,
and then,
but it was a great price. It was the amount of flour we bought was cheaper than a regular like 1 pound bag or something.
I'm at the point now where everything is caught back up and I'm feeling a bit panicky. Like
the flour isn't.
I'm Clorox wiped. I'm at the point where I need to re-up them and it makes me nervous. It reminds me of the time whenever I used to not answer the phone because I was getting so many collection calls.
Oh, that's scary.
Like every time the phone rang, it was just this panic attack
that
somebody had found me and they were just going to yell at me a whole bunch. And
wait, what are they going to... The phone thing is so interesting because I have super duper phone anxiety retail days from... Yeah. If ever I had a day off and they would call me and be like, hey, shit's going sideways, you need to come in. So my phone ringing was never a good thing and I'd always have to change the ringtone because I would get too triggered by the current ringtone.
Right.
But it's wild because what can happen on the phone? They can't do anything on the phone.
Right. Yeah,
but
just don't answer.
It's still just, having a conversation sucks.
When I got all my bills caught up and then I could answer the phone, it was like this big moment, like, oh my God, I can just answer the phone.
Yeah.
But I still get that anxiety feeling. I'm having the same feeling about Clorox wipes. Like, oh, I finally made it through. I can get Clorox wipes again.
Like a post-COVID thing?
Yeah, but then I'm like, oh, there's other people that might need more Clorox wipes than I do. And I buy them in the big bulk thing. But I've gotten through them all. And anyway, I just went to look for Clorox wipes. I don't have any down here within arm's reach, which would be handy right now. I don't want to go all the way upstairs. No. To the last remaining one. That's the only one left is upstairs. That's it.
Just spit on some paper towel.
Well, that's what I did.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah.
Oh, problem solved. They're the Bizarre Collectors.
It's the nipples of the shipple.
Oh, the nipples of the shipple. Amazing. Okay, let's get my intro. Do you want to know what the Bizarre Collectors do?
The Bussard Collectors. And yeah. By the way, it's not bizarre. It's B-U-S-S-A-R-D, right?
Bussard.
Bussard.
Bussard Collectors. Okay. I don't, my English accent. Okay, okay. Going to make it weird. Guess what they do. Collectors. Guess what function they serve.
Well, they collect bussards, obviously. The question is, what the fuck is a bussard? Oh, let me think about this for a second. Mm-hmm. Okay, I know. Here's my clues. We're in the red bit of the nacelle.
Yes.
Which powers the scooty forward stuff.
Nope.
Shit. It is the stabilizers for space flying.
Stabilizers in what way?
It's the bussards, obviously. There's some bussard stabilization happening, but it collects something. Okay, it collects.
Okay, wait, did somebody tell you?
No, I'm thinking about it. Okay. Just let me get there and use my engineering genius that's just untapped. So it's got to collect something and then shoot it out the back.
No, it's not. That's fuck. That's not how spaceships work.
It is.
It's how chemical rockets work.
It's like a little propulsion thing, you know, mm-hmm. but it doesn't need that because it's space. Okay, is it about particles?
Yes, it is.
Yes. I got something right. Why is it called, is Bussard the name of a person?
Yeah, it's named after a person, okay. I believe.
Okay. And this person identified that you have to collect something, otherwise the ship doesn't move properly for some reason.
Not exactly.
Fucking hell.
But you're right on the collecting part. And I appreciate the live chat not spoiling anything. Other than Slab, who says it collects souls.
It's a soul harvesting device. Yeah,
alien souls. That's what it does.
Okay. What does it collect? Particles of some kind. Why? Why would it do that? Because it doesn't have anything to do with its needing to, I don't fucking know.
Named after Robert W. Bussard or Bussard, you were most of the way there. It can collect and disperse particles.
What? You said it couldn't disperse particles? You had to look that fucking shit up. I heard you over there typing.
I didn't say it. I actually just looked up whether Bussard was made up or it was an actual person. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it collects and disperses particles, mainly hydrogen. So as it's going through space, it will collect material and actually use that as energy. So it's an efficiency thing. But it can
energy
also be used
what?
To like disperse energy for the toilets, the showers, the replicators, the transporters, all kinds of stuff.
So it doesn't use it for ejecting anything. It collects
no,
it.
No, no, it
to
can
use
disperse
it.
Particles as well. It can eject particles. So when you said like, did I say it doesn't eject? It doesn't eject it out the back is what I meant. Because then it would be like, it ejects
thank
it
you.
Out of the front.
Let's just go to the chat. Let's go to CM Dr. Smith. I was right.
That's not what you said.
It collects interstellar hydrogen or other things to power the fusion reactors and the warp
exactly.
core.
You said it fires it out the back to propel it forward. That's not what it... No, that's not what it... No.
It's bringing stuff in to propel itself.
It's not shooting it out the back. No, yes, it is to propel itself, but not to fire it out the back. Like
that's
fucking,
what I was talking about. I wasn't talking about laser beams. I was talking about moving it forward.
Then you're correct. I thought you meant like fire out of the back of the nacelles. Like, and then fire it out like a jet turbine. No.
To the window!
To the wall!
Sweat and balls!
Sweat and balls and sweat and balls. Not including that.
You
maybe
are.
Maybe I will.
Yeah, you are.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs. Plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.